It's the Jeremiah Show. Tearing back the curtain on the hospitality, music, and entertainment industry with insider tips and the hottest global guests in the biz. With Dr. D and special LA personal development commentator Mike Gormley. He's a restaurant and bar fixture, a partner with legendary rock star drummer Mick Fleetwood in Fleetwood's on Front Street in Maui, and he's your radio host. And now, from a race around the sun, Jeremiah Higgins.
We do a completely different menu every Sunday, so the beginning's always a little like,
My name is Sarah, and I'm the sous chef here at Luke. Every Sunday, of course, is different, and it really reflects what's in the markets and what the weather's like. This is the Bloomsdale spinach that Suzanne tried at the farmer's market from Alex Weiser. It's an heirloom spinach. It doesn't have as much tannin as other varieties. It's a really sweet spinach.
So I'm doing this warm, a warm spinach salad with the chicken saltimbocca. Saltimbocca is a classic Italian dish. It means jump in the mouth. Because it's so delicious, it just jumps. It just jumps in your mouth. And we're gonna garnish that with the pomegranate salsa.
We get our pomegranates from Peter Shaner, who grows pomegranates and the most amazing citrus in Southern California. And Suzanne's been working with him for a long time. He actually delivers all of our Wednesday market orders. We love Peter Shaner.
So it'll be pomegranate seeds with diced shallot, pomegranate molasses, lemon juice, olive oil. Parsley spooned over the top.
Thank you.
Working at Luke really is a dream come true. Working with Suzanne is amazing, and it's, you know, we get to work with the farmers and we get to go and see them at the market. That's why I work here.
I'm Stephanie, and I'm the pastry assistant here at Luke. Right now, persimmons are really great. These are the Fuyu persimmons. They're a little bit harder. These we're just gonna slice up to put ice cream on. And then we have some of the high chia, which we use to make a compote. This is like one of my favorite times of the year is when the persimmons come back.
Welcome to the Jeremiah Show. This is part two of our special on the restaurant Luke, which opened in 1998 by Suzanne Gowen and Caroline Stein, was run so well by general manager Matthew Duggan, and no relation to Richard Duggan, from 2008, I believe he said. So we're calling this a love letter to Luke, which it is. It's seven stories told by seven very special guests. Enjoy. It was a iconic restaurant, known world around the world for, you know, foodies, people that loved food and wine, loved the staff at Luke. Loved the atmosphere and the building. It was just a very, very special place. And as this pandemic changes our lives in so many ways, I have witnessed one great restaurant after another fall victim to COVID's crippling reach, which means many of our favorite neighborhood joints and the iconic restaurants we have all come to love are gone forever. Nothing left but the brick and the mortar and the memories. Birthdays, pregnancies, weddings, anniversaries, maybe just our favorite place for friends and family to squeeze into a booth together, laugh at the very end of the day, now that the challenges are over and don't seem so important, shared over great wine, great cocktails, great food and drinks. First and second and third generations all meeting at the same spot each year. Luke was that. There are not many restaurants that can say that. Restaurants and their staff become a part of our extended families. Again, Luke is one such restaurant. If you are like me, you are craving great news right now, good news, anything heartwarming, anything that is not COVID-related. You just want to hear something nice, something good, a good story. Well, over the next 2 hours of this show, part one and part two, we're going to tell the story of Luke through you, the guest, and then what it meant to each of you. It's seven stories told by seven very special guests. Enjoy.
Michael Oates Palmer. Michael loves restaurants, loves dining. He plans trips around food destinations all over the country and abroad. He's a successful and very busy TV writer here in Los Angeles, but when you hear how he speaks about the people and places and his travels, you think, this guy should be a food writer too. If he ever decided to go commercial with his passion for the food scene, I think he'd have a James Beard Award of his own. He's the first guy to call when you need dining recommendations in any city, and one of our all-time favorite occupants of the corner bar seat. Please welcome Michael Oates Palmer.
Michael Oates Palmer. He's a writer, producer for TV in Los Angeles. He's our special guest today. He's a big Luke fan. He's not only a Luke fan, but he... From what I hear from Matt, Dr. D, he travels the world from food festivals. He's stomping grapes out there, I hear, sometimes. You're making wine. You are traveling the world looking for great food in your downtime, if there is much of that, from your producing and your writing for television. Welcome, Michael Oates Palmer. Again, one of the coolest names I've heard in a long time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us,
Michael, what, by the way, would you like me to say your full name every single time? Because I would be happy to.
I think that then we will have no time at all for any conversation.
I just like saying it. So, Michael, let me get to the question. I apologize. You're a big food fan. You're a big wine fan. Tell me a little bit about your life and up to Luke and then beyond.
Up to Luke. I mean, I work as a writer and producer for television. And while that sometimes means I might be writing on the writing staffs of existing television shows, other times it might mean that I'm writing pilots that could potentially become new series. And if one of the downsides of my field is that there is some instability in terms of when one gig starts and one ends, one of the upsides is the freedom you have to do travel, to go do things. And especially when I'm writing pilots, I've often like taken a month to go rent a place in New Orleans and go right there or go up to, San Francisco for a week and kind of just to kind of get away and mix it up. But also I think as a writer, I just think it's important to kind of always be traveling and reading and experiencing new things just so that you're not staying still. And I think for me, food and restaurants have always been a passion, but also a vehicle for connection, both to the places you travel to people, to friends, to loved ones, and also to yourself. And I think kind of connecting to yourself via the meals and, there's a writer I love who passed away a couple of years ago, James Salter, but he had a line, which he actually titled a later book, Life is Meals. And I think that's very much the philosophy I try to hold on to.
Do you need to get that? You may have just you may have just got a big deal. You know, we don't want you to miss your big deals.
I should just disconnect the phone. I'm sorry.
That might be the next big blockbuster scripture writing.
There we go. Sorry about that. Apologies.
Life is meals and what happens in between, right? Like phone calls.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, no, that's really, I love how you describe that, you know, where you go to these towns, you rent a little flat or whatever and write and then go out and experience meals, experience the culture, the staff, the people in these towns. I'd imagine that as you kind of painted that picture for us, I can imagine that it really adds to the writing and the characters observing. Is there a better place to observe human behavior than a restaurant?
Oh, I mean, 100%. I think when you think about what happens at a restaurant, whether it's people falling in love, people falling out of love, people going to celebrate something, people going to console themselves, people reconnecting with an old friend, people burying the hatchet, that I think so much of the human drama happens at restaurants, because I think there's so many reasons we either need a safe, neutral territory for two people or more, or a place that feels festive in terms of where we have something we need to celebrate and want to celebrate and connect with people over. I think that's the case.
And now Luke, coming up to Luke, how was that, how did you discover Luke? What did it mean to you? Can you tell me a special story, something that stands out, an experience at Luke that really, because it was, correct me if I'm wrong, it was your favorite restaurant?
Why was it your favorite restaurant?
I
said to people when they first announced that they were going to be closing, I was like, one of the things that made Luke special to me was Luke is a great American restaurant, it was a great California restaurant, and it was a great Los Angeles restaurant. And all those things, there's an overlap in the Venn diagram, but each of those things have specific meanings and connections. But for me also, it was my great American restaurant. That I think there's something that we love about that. You can go to many great places, but there is something when you feel like it is like the theme song on Cheers, that we do want to go to a place where everybody knows your name and where you feel that membership has its privileges, that being a regular is something, that really feels good when you know exactly what you like to get on the menu, when you know like which wines you dig, and also you've just gotten to know the people who work at that restaurant. And I just think Luke existed. It was a great American restaurant in terms of the quality of the food it did that gave it that national profile. I feel it was a great California restaurant in terms of embracing what I think California, that's been so special in California in terms of embracing the localized, the unrivaled produce and meats that we have here. And that caused it to follow in that great tradition, starting with kind of Chez Panisse and going all the way through restaurants like Spago and Campanile, but also just a great Los Angeles restaurant in the sense that I think that LA for such a long time had such a chip on its shoulder that people didn't take us seriously as a food city. Mm-hmm. And I think that once we stopped trying to mimic something that somebody could find a better version of in New York and creating something that could be only found in Los Angeles, whether in some restaurants cases that might mean in terms of drawing from the influence of traditional immigrant communities, or in the case of Luke, really something that felt from when you walked in that this is a restaurant you could only find in Los Angeles. And I loved all of that.
Yeah. Is there one instance, one night, or one particular memory that you take from Luke that you'll take with you as a marker, milestone marker?
It's a fun question. I mean, it's hard because when I think about my experiences with Luke, it almost is more a montage sequence you would see in a movie where it all comes flooding back, whether it's a meal with that girlfriend from 10 years ago where we ate at the bar and just had that great conversation, or sitting across the table from my dad and just feeling that quality of kind of stolen time and just seeing him eat those short ribs that he loves. Or when they would have the annual Ribs Fest that I had wrangled 12 friends and we somehow piled into a booth that was really only made for 8 people and just ate ribs like crazy. And I feel sometimes the best restaurants, they connect with you on several different levels. And I think that that I could go in there for a big blowout celebratory feast, or what my last meal was there, which was the day that I heard that they were going to be closing, which was a week before the lockdown started. I went, met up with a friend and just ate steak frites at the bar. And had, I think, a cocktail. They had those great artisanal cocktails that Christian, the bartender, would make. And it just felt great. And there was something about the look of the place added to it with the wood and the brick. It felt warm. It felt like you were at somebody's place in that best way. And I'm a believer that the restaurants often reflect the personality of the people who created it. And when you meet both Suzanne and Caroline, they're warm people. And they are people who want to bring you in and want to feed you. It's not a sterile restaurant. We've been to some restaurants, I'm sure you've been to them too, that can feel great food, but it can feel like you're in an art museum. Mm-hmm. It's cold. And what I loved about Luke was that it made you feel welcomed. And when you're finding a place at the welcome table, that's so crucial.
What a great image, a final image there of the final meal at your favorite restaurant, Luke. You know, sitting at the bar there and looking around and knowing that's the last meal I'm going to have at my, you know, your favorite restaurant.
I will miss it and I will mourn it and the people who work there, but it's great that I think that community remains, and it just might shift sometimes in terms of where you find.
Yeah. Michael Oates Palmer, he's a writer, a producer for TV in Los Angeles. Thank you so much, Michael, for telling us your story and being a part of this special. It's great to hear why and how you loved Luke. Have a great day, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Hope it's helpful. Take care.
Yes, I understand that every life must end. As we sit alone, I know someday we must go. I'm a lucky man to count on both hands the ones I love. Some folks just have one, you know, others they've got none. Stay with me. Let's just breathe. Thank you.
Bickerstaff.
Beth does amazing commercial photography, musicians, and album covers, gorgeous food shots, fine art, advertising. I love it all, but I think my favorite are her street photos and documentary work. We met her shooting a wedding at Luke, but she soon became our sometimes documentarian and friend. She's been around and used her talent to capture some really special moments off the floor and behind the scenes. Please meet my friend Beth.
We've got documentary, fine art, and entertainment photographer on right now, Beth Hertzhaft. Welcome, Beth, to the show.
Thank you.
So happy to have you do this very special show. Tell your story about Luke and what it meant to you. I, before we get started, though, I have to really point out here, Matt told me that you were an amazing photographer. You and I have not met in person yet, but I'm looking at the roster of some of the names, just some of the, a few of the names that you've taken photographs of. Beck, one of my favorites. Radiohead, another favorite. And I know those guys are really hard to, they don't do a lot of press on a lot of photos and a lot of media and marketing. So, I mean, they're just great and people find them and you've
and
taken their
so
photos. They're so great. So talented. D'Angelo. Mazzy Star, or is it May? How do you say
Mazzy?
Mazzy?
Yeah.
Mazzy Star, Alanis Morissette, Herbie Hancock. So, welcome to the show, Beth. Amazing,
probably
amazing photographer.
Bill Gates, independent records, right?
You have a really neat history with Luke, and I'm hoping that maybe you could share a little bit of that history and how you, you know, how you came to discover this very, very special restaurant that we're paying tribute to this hour on the show.
Yeah, I first went to Luke because of actually Todd Joe and Carolyn when I photographed their wedding at Luke. And that was on 11-11-11 at 11-11 a.m. They wanted to get married at that exact time, which was pretty awesome. But that was my first, you know, getting into the orbit of Luke. And it was just such an amazing vibe that was really profoundly different from other places.
At all.
You know, that it managed to be like genteel. And but perfection and chill and good humor, like all at the same time, which you rarely see. And, you know, amazing service and food.
What if I could interrupt for a minute, Beth, what an interesting date and time and like precise 11-11. How did that come about? Do you know, or was that just,
you know, I don't know. I would just think, you know, it's sort of too good of a number to pass up,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I wonder if it was a coincidence or planned that way. It sounds like it was probably planned. Yeah, planned.
Probably planned.
I guess they needed to print a bunch of stuff, I'm sure.
Right, yeah.
Well, so you mentioned also then meeting Matt and the staff and the warm welcome and all that they gave you. Do you remember, Matt is such a dynamic guy. We've gotten to know him through the guests over the last hour, the part one of the show and now part two with you. Do you remember meeting Matt for the first time and what he was, you know, can you give us a little bit of an insight into the personality that he is that became the face, you know, of Luke in the front end there, the front of the house with so many guests?
Oh, definitely. I met him there at that wedding. And he really is incredibly dynamic, as you know, and everyone else knows. But it really is a job that might, to the casual observer, look easy, but it's just so incredibly intense.
Oh, yeah.
And multi-layered and complicated that, you know, that it's just so impressive and just a really wicked sense of humor too, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
Met him there and he just is keeping everything moving.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. It is an incredibly intense job with, you know, you've got to keep your mind sharp in so many areas and so many things, so many balls, so to speak, in the air that you're juggling.
Right.
And that, He seems to do it with ease. Now, some of the, how do you like, as a photographer, you know, looking through those eyes, those artist's eyes, looking at this restaurant, what do you love about shooting at Luke or did you love it shooting, you know, people at Luke and, you know, some of the qualities of the restaurant, you know, the brick and mortar, the patio,
Of course, the design, especially the bar, that it's created to be intimate, but not putting. Uh-huh. And, you know, of course, the design goes with that, you know, the brick walls, the tables, good size. And you know, bank of windows on one side and a great patio on the other.
Good light.
Yeah. I love that place.
Yeah. What will you miss the most about Luke?
Probably the personality of, well, the uniqueness. God, how do I put this? I'm glad this isn't live.
So are we.
What?
I said, so are we. There are technical difficulties here.
I would say that, the people, you know, mm-hmm. Matt, the employees, Christian, and the staff, you know, Isabel, there's just everyone there is amazing. And it's the thing with the staff is it's clear they love the place and they love their jobs. And you just really don't see that a lot.
No, you don't.
And you really can feel it because you can feel when somebody doesn't.
For sure.
In fact, I was shooting something there. I don't remember what it was. And afterwards, late at night, I wandered back into the kitchen and two employees had just gotten their citizenship that day and were celebrating. And Matt and the others had the kitchen make them these gorgeous little cakes. And they were having a congratulations there in the kitchen. It was really beautiful.
Mm. Which
I photographed, of course.
And I'll share some of those if you don't mind. You've shared them with me. You've got this busy restaurant. You've got a wait, you know, I'm sure a wait all the time at the front. You've got actors and musicians and incredible talented artists such as yourself throughout the restaurant and people just in dining and enjoying themselves in a safe environment where the food is great, the drinks are great, the staff loves what they're doing. And then you go through these Eliason doors, you know, these swinging doors into the back kitchen and you come up upon behind the scenes, you know, this magical moment these two people had uh-huh. that worked there had just received their citizenship and the staff is, you know, sharing slices of cake and also taking care of the guest. And there's just the spirit of Luke is alive and happy and what a neat experience to see that.
And how many places would do that for their employees?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that just says right there to me. I mean, you know, how they say the society, it, you know, can be looked at by how it treats its most vulnerable members.
Yeah.
Well,
right.
How you treat your staff.
Well, what a great message for for these times right now. Thank you, Beth, for sharing your story with us. That was very beautiful. And we're really happy to have you on the show. We're happy to have you on the show today. You and I hopefully need to catch up and talk about your great photography on another program. But I really appreciate you lending your story and sharing that with us today.
Thank you so much for the time. And, you know, thank you to Luke. you know, for all the great years.
Well said. Beth Herzhaft, she is a documentary, fine art, and entertainment photographer. Have a great day, Beth.
You too. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Robert Bauer. Bobby is a veteran writer, producer, director. He's even done a great series set in iconic LA restaurants. He's been dining with us for years, but we really got close when I asked him for help making an anniversary movie for Luke. That whole year, all those guest chefs and celebrations were some of my fondest memories. Bobby and his wife Allison and their kids are running what's really the best night out in town. The dinner party was legendary. Amazing food, amazing guests. I think I picked up some hospitality tips from Team Bauer.
Bobby Bauer, welcome to the Jeremiah Show. Bobby Bauer is a producer, and he also, just have to mention again, for the radio listeners, he was in Spinal Tap. I just love that film, and I think so many people do. So this is, and your character again was named...
Moke.
Moke.
I was the roadie.
Moke the roadie. Well, Bobby, thanks so much for doing this show. We're just really talking about Luke, the restaurant, and, you know, 1998 to 2020. You know, we're losing some of these iconic restaurants that have become our home away from home, our extended family, our favorite place to grab a cocktail or a good dinner. And I know that you've had a lot of many good nights and many good days, probably lunches and dinners at Luke. What was why did you choose Luke? Was it a place for business? Was it a place for relaxing, for family? How did you become one with the Luke family?
Well, yeah. it's as you said, it was a Los Angeles staple. And I know you guys, at one point interviewed my friend, Billy Harris. And you know, Billy, we were lucky enough to, I was asked to sort of put together their 20th anniversary, Luke's 20th anniversary, little sort of family and friends video film. It was like a 20-minute thing, and it was interviews and some historical archival footage. And Billy was one of the guys we interviewed, and Billy really teed it up well. And he said, listen, you know, it's a feat to have a restaurant last, you know, 3 years, right, 5 years, 10 years, but you have a restaurant that stuck around successfully at the vanguard of quality and had the same people that came in on that opening night 20 years later, that's a phenomenal feat in the annals of the restaurant business, you know, the global restaurant business. So, and I think the, you know, the other thing that makes it pretty phenomenal is that it was, you know, it was two women, you know, that started this restaurant, you know, and they, Carolyn and Suzanne, they just, you know, just really humble, lovely, pioneering, strong, fierce women that started this restaurant, or, you know, in a time when women generally weren't doing this sort of thing, you know, Nancy, of course, and, you know, a few, a select few. So I just think it's such a testament to the two of them and to just the staying power of the restaurant. It really has to do with them and the culture that they created. So going back to your question, you know, it was a staple in town, and we have very dear friends that I think were early investors, or they were just super tight with Carolyn and Suzanne and Matt and Liza, Matthew Velks and Liza Chasen. And we knew, I think we went to dinner with them ages ago in the first year that it opened. And then my wife's family's from the East Coast. They'd fly out and we took them there, and my father-in-law fell in love with the place. And, you know, it was always a stop for him. It was Spago's, old Spago's up on above Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke, and, yeah, it was just, it just sort of became part of, an extension of our family, which I think is really the recipe for the staying power of Luke, in that, to many people, it was home away from home, and the vibe, the atmosphere walking through the front door, you felt like you were in someone's living room. You felt very much, you know, hearth and heart, like just very warm and intimate, yet it just felt like you knew the people and they knew you, and there was a shorthand there. And that was true of people that, you know, that came either for Sunday dinner week after week after week, or people that would pop in. It just, there was, you just, everybody that came into that place, I think, felt the same thing, was this, this wonderful home vibe. You know, and on top of that, the food was bonkers, so you know, you have that going for you, and you know, it's a recipe, food pun intended, for success, you know. Yeah. So I think that's really, so that's how we came to it. That's how we ended up going back and back and back over the years. And like I said, I'm not a foodie or anything. I like to go out with my wife, take a break from the kids, or go out with the kids, have a good meal, get moderately hammered, and and come home. And I don't like a lot of fuss.
Yeah.
And I don't like to go out to places where I just feel uncomfortable. And I think that was the beautiful trap. You know, that was the beautiful honey trap of Luke. You know, just it was home away from home in so many ways.
Bobby, what dish will you miss the most from Luke? Your favorite dish?
You know, the cast iron chicken pretty much bowled me over. You know, I would have that a lot. I would have the halibut or the salmon. My kids would, you know, would always have the, you know, the steak, or the, you know, I think we ate a lot of what was on the menu, a lot of varied things, but I can taste that chicken. I can smell it.
You know, well, I was going to say, I asked that question because I wanted to torture Richard Dugan, Dr. D here. I like to ask the food questions to get him. He can't get out from behind the sound booth for all day long, so I just like to make him salivate. Yeah. So thank you. That, you painted that picture. Actually, now I'm hungry.
Oh, I would also, I mean, I would have, Christian would always make, you know, some crazy, insane, beautiful cocktail, but I would, you know, I'd like the Mexican firing squad. Did you ever have that?
No, that sounds pretty nice though. Pretty sounds like you're feeling no pain after that.
Tequila, pomegranate, bitters.
Oh, yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good.
You know, I think it's worth repeating, and I cite the 20th anniversary party and dinner and video that we were a part of that we made. That happened, ironically, sadly, just before the pandemic. Like, it was, I think, just 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, something like that. Like, we had just celebrated their 20th anniversary. And then this thing, you know, hit. What I was so moved by in interviewing fellow chefs of theirs, peers of theirs, people like Billy Harris, customers, there are a lot of famous customers there. I mean, there was, you know, people, and as Carolyn and Suzanne, you know, said, they started the restaurant and people, the staff became family. The staff ended up either in certain cases marrying each other and having children, mm-hmm. or getting married and having children, or just clocking in day after day, year after year. And you know, I mean, any relationship that lasts that long, let alone a business, is just phenomenal. And so in interviewing a lot of these people for this fun little film we did, it was just a constant, you know, that was the constant callback was the, you know, the vibe and how internally promotional Carolyn and Suzanne were in terms of their staff and bringing their staff up and bringing, you know, sous chefs up and just, there was just something about that place, I think, that was really, really magical, and yet it was so, the attitude was so humble, so much humility. You know, I think that they were always surprised that the restaurant filled up every night. You know, I think that each and every night they took none of it for granted. And I think that that's a, you know, I think it's a lost attitude. I was going to say a little bit of a lost personal art, but I feel like, you know, if anything comes, although I think there's a lot of hope and a lot of potential positivity to come out of this shitstorm that we're currently in. But I feel like part of that is not to go back to normal, because there were certain aspects of that normal that were not as embracing, you know, and were potentially more self-serving. Yeah. And I think their attitude and what they had was this thing that I hope we fall back to, forward thinking, right? Which is just, you know, real tradecraft and real humility about what you get up and do day in and day out, you know, and a real appreciation for it and a real appreciation for the people that come together that allow you to do what you love. I think that's
and they do it with such style and grace that it looks like it's effortless, but it really isn't. Yeah. And it's really a rarity. Bobby Bauer, I really appreciate you. Those are beautiful words, and you summed up Luke and why we are doing this special really well for us there. I really appreciate that. Yeah, There are not a lot of places out there like this. And when they do it right, it's, and then they're gone. Everything ends. But I wanted, we wanted to stop here for a moment and just pay tribute to Luke, Suzanne Goen, Caroline Stein, Matt, and all the staff there. And then to, from the guest's perspective, from your perspective, Bobby, and that was so appreciated.
Of course.
Thank you so much.
Of course, of course. I hope I made you guys good and jealous.
We're hungry, that's for sure. All right, Bobby Bauer.
All right, take good care. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Bobby Bauer, producer in Los Angeles. Check his projects out. We'll be right back after this break.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
The honey of a girl. Her eyes were hazel, her teeth were slightly curved. She took my guitar and she began to play. She sang a song to me, stuck right in my brain. You're just a memory of a love that you You're just a memory of love that used to mean so much to me.
Attraction was purely physical.
Rosie and Peter Casey. Rosie and Peter are lovely. They embody loveliness. Our relationship with them was really cemented when their son Liam staged in the Luke kitchen. It's one thing to like people as guests, but seeing how Liam handled himself made me fall a little in love with them as a family. You know, lunch with Peter was an auction prize once. Someone was flown in from New York just to spend time with him. If you knew these guys, you'd place a pretty high bid yourself. Please welcome Rosie and Peter Casey.
Dr. D, it is amazing the guest, the special guest that our good friend now, General Manager Matt Duggan introduced us to. I just can't believe we spent 2 hours here now talking to seven or so guests from Luke. And I'm pinching myself because these are some of the most creative and prolific artists in Hollywood that we've been introduced to, from photographers to architects to we've got Peter Casey on the line right now. He's the writer, the co-creator, Emmy Award winner, executive producer of Frasier and Wings. Wings was my dad's favorite show.
That was fun show.
Yeah. It was that was my dad's favorite. Brings back special memories there. And he was the writer and producer of Cheers for 3.5 years. He was the writer and the producer of The Jeffersons. I talk about Cheers being on a loop for me. When I go to bed at night, I'll put that on because I want to laugh. You know, I want something to end my day on a positive note. And The Jeffersons was constantly playing at my grandfather's house. So that brings back special memories too. And then we've got his very talented wife, Rosie Casey. She's a songwriter and a singer. They are in the middle of a move today, and they were so gracious to drop the boxes for 10 minutes and hang out with us and tell us how Luke was a part of their life. And welcome both of you to the show. I appreciate your time here today.
Thank you. Great to be with you. And thank you for giving us a break from the boxers.
I know. Can you, if you can hide out long enough, maybe somebody will come and move them for you.
Yeah. Got my fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, tell us, I mean, we've talked throughout the show. You're our final interview and really looking forward to it. But we've heard from different guests of Luke, all the different sorts of stories. You know, it's third generational. It's their anniversary spot. They fell in love at the bar. They found out that they were having a baby. You know, not at the bar. Hopefully, all these great stories. And it strikes me like, you know, there are not too many restaurants out there like Luke that span two or three generations that become these icons, these institutions, these home away from homes, these, you know, extended family with staff. What did Luke mean to you and your family?
Yeah.
Well, Luke was very, very special to us for a number of reasons. We were actually introduced to Luke the first year it was opened. We used to have a tradition at Frasier and Wings where when the first episode of the season would air, we would have a premiere party at a restaurant, and we would rent out the whole restaurant for the night, and we would have the cast and the whole writing staff and their spouses and partners come, and we would all watch the show together. And the first year Luke was open, it was the hottest restaurant in town and impossible to get into, but somehow we were able to finagle that evening. And
did you bring your Emmy to the did you bring your Emmy up to the host stand?
I did not. Not that, that night.
That might get
although,
you.
Although the wings are perfect for holding a martini olive, you know. But so Luke was, they were just incredibly gracious, and they had monitors in so that everybody could sit at their table and watch the show together. And it was just an incredibly festive and joyous night with lots of laughs, lots of great food. Incredible wine and cocktails, and we loved it so much that we had two more premiere parties over the years for Frasier there, and it absolutely became Rosie's and my favorite restaurant.
Peter, if I could just pause for a second on your career, how many years was Cheers on? Was it 10 seasons?
Cheers was, actually, interestingly enough, the Jeffersons, Cheers, and Frasier were all on for 11 seasons.
11 seasons.
Wings was on for 8 years.
So you're, you know, when we talk about restaurants, not too many make it to 21 years like Luke, or, you know, two decades or past even a year sometimes. So you are basically on the film side. You have a track record like Suzanne does on the restaurant side. You have this great track record of great shows and many seasons. Rosie,
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I imagine. And Rosie, you know, with your family, I imagine you guys have children, and there have been many special occasions there. Aside from screening parties or things like that, is Luke one of the places that you take family and that you celebrate special occasions in your life, milestones?
Absolutely. Not only did we take our three sons there at special times, you know, for some really special either birthdays or, you know, graduation and whatnot, but whenever Peter and I are the only two from each of our families that lives in Los Angeles, of our immediate families, and so when a sibling would come into town, Luke was always the place we took them, and we always requested a booth, and most of the time we were lucky enough to get a booth. But any spot in that restaurant was so special, and our families still talk about Luke. There is also a very fun story that happened regarding our youngest son Liam, and he has a very special place in his world and his heart about Luke. He ended up working there, and that's a story I could tell if you
please,
if you ever wanted
please do.
To know that one.
Yeah, he staged there, correct?
I'm sorry?
He staged at Luke for
yes,
a while, right?
Yes, he did.
Correct?
Yes, he yeah. did. Unbeknownst to Peter and me, he set it up all on his own. But wow. he was great.
He emailed Suzanne, and she was incredibly gracious to get back to him. He was so excited, and she did, and she had him in for an interview. He was 15 or 16, and
we had been to a premiere of a film in Century City of an Australian director that we had met in Australia, Liam, Peter, and I. And on the way home from seeing this premiere, Liam, you know, he was a budding fan of cooking and chefs and restaurants and recipes, and he asked if we could eat there, and we all kind of laughed because it was 5 minutes to 5, and we thought there's no way we're going to get in, but we called. Miraculously, we got in, and we had this amazing dinner, the three of us, and we finished and drove home to Toluca Lake, and that was the end of the story. Unbeknownst to Peter and me, Liam, on his way out the door, grabbed a business card of Suzanne's from the reception area, and he put it in his pocket. And it turns out that he, on the next day, emailed her, reached out to her, and explained how he and a group of kids loved cooking and seriously loved cooking. And he asked if he could, you know, do this shadow for a day to see how a real kitchen, you know, was it worked. And it turns out these kids, every Friday after school, were playing their own version of Top Chef.
Oh,
they cooked, other kids in the group voted, and there'd be a winner. And then they would all sit down together and eat this meal that they made. And these, again, were not kid food dishes, I'll tell you. And so it turns out Suzanne had responded to Liam. She had said she would love to meet him. And we know nothing about this. And the next thing, he's running down our stairs early in the morning, holding his laptop, breathless, and saying, "She wrote me, you know, she wrote me back, she wants to meet." And we said, "Who?" And he says, "Suzanne Gowen of Luke." So she had read what he had written to her, and she had asked him to come in, that she would like to meet him. And that meeting ended up turning into her offer to him to intern that summer. And he didn't even have a license. He wasn't old enough to drive. So we drove him.
Wow.
And the first night we went to pick him up, I pulled up to the curb to get Liam. And I'm just waiting for him to get in the car. And my cell phone rings, and my songwriting partner, Kenny Hirsch, calls. And I pick up, and Kenny is breathless. He says, "Liam's on the TV. He's on the news." And I said, "No, he's not. He's inside Luke, and I'm here to pick him up." He said, "Rosie, I'm watching NBC right now, and Liam's on the news, and the tag says, 'Liam Casey, Luke intern.'" It turns out that very day, Michelle Obama and her two daughters and mother were there for lunch. It was 2010. The girls were on a vacation. And that day, Liam, it was his first day. He was in the restaurant working, and Suzanne asked him to make two salads for the girls. And when NBC was interviewing Suzanne later that night, because the Obamas had come into the restaurant, she said, "You should really talk to Liam. He's the one that made salads for the girls." And she was so generous to turn the camera to Liam. It was just an incredible first day for him.
What a perfect underscore to define Suzanne and her graciousness and her and passing it on, right? And on the first day to give him credit like that, but that just says so much about her. And
it does.
Yeah,
she's incredibly
generous. She was so kind, so generous, and he learned so much. She ended up asking him to return as an intern again the following summer, which he did. And it really changed his life. He saw what a true, brilliant restaurant is and what they do and how it works. And it turns out that Liam did not end up in the restaurant business. He's a writer, but Suzanne was the one he asked to write his college application letter of recommendation. We still have a copy of it. It is one of the most beautiful letters I've ever read. And it made Peter and me cry when we read it. She is just incredible.
I think that is the perfect story to end this this segment, this show, this special show, this tribute, a love letter to Luke from the guest that knew Luke well and knew it best. I really love that story. And does he know? I'm sure he knows that his first job, his first internship for Suzanne Goen. That's a pretty nice feather in your cap there.
It's a pretty good way to start.
That's a great way to start. But wow, you guys, thank you so much for your story. Thank you for your time. I wish I had more time to talk to you. I have a feeling there's many, many stories like that we could tell. But that was a beautiful story, and thank you for sharing it with us on air today.
You're very welcome.
It's a joy to be a part of this today. Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
And Richard and I, we're going to jump in our car. We're going to come down and help you move the rest of those boxes. We'll be right there.
Be careful.
Yeah, don't give me anything fragile, though. Yeah. I might drop it. All right.
Track you down.
Everyone, have a great rest of your night and safe moving. Communicate, listen more, and evolve. Thank you for joining us on this very special show.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
A little shoeshine boy, he never gets low down, but he's got the dirtiest job in town. Bending low at the people's feet on a windy corner of a dirty street. Will I ask him while he shined my shoes how to keep from getting the blues? He grinned as he raised his little head. He popped his shoeshine rag and then he said, get rhythm. When you get the blues, come on, get rhythm. When you get the blues, a jumpy rhythm makes you feel so fine. It'll shake all your trouble from your worried mind. Get a rhythm when you get the blues.
Dancing every night, I'm gonna see all the city lights. I'm do everything silver and gold. I got to hurry up before I grow too old. I'm gonna take a trip around the world. I'm gonna kiss all the pretty girls. I'm do everything silver and gold. And I got to hurry up before I grow too old.
Thank you so much for listening to this very special edition of A Love Letter to Luke. Seven very special stories, very special, seven very special guests. And there are a couple guests that Matt wanted to mention, the general manager. And here is his little intro.
Taggio and Carrie Welsh. Many know him as the genius behind numerous medical devices and I'm going to say implantable polymers. For us at Luke, he's a standing reservation booth 13 every Sunday supper since forever. Suzanne's dad was one of Taggio's surgical mentors, so he supported her through every venture. They love wine, travel, great art, good whiskey. They dine with Nobel winners, astronauts, museum curators. But I think our favorite nights were when it was just the two of them and we could have them to ourselves. Seriously, when Carrie laughs, you feel like you won a prize. Blythe and Tom Main, like so many of my favorites, Luke was in any and an all occasion place for them. Blythe and Tom would come in with family. There were business meetings. Quite often they just drop in, just the two of them, for a bite at the bar. And I love stopping to chat. I usually had to force myself to leave to go back to work. Tom's quite tall, so he always sat at booth 11, which had a little bit more leg. Mark Danielewski. I love Mark. How do you not love a guy that can put novelist and fire reader on his resume? He sat at booth 15 more times than I think either of us can remember. Most often with his dear friend and fellow writer, Brett, but always with someone that could sustain great conversation and more than a few laughs over the best steak in town. When he was solo, he'd sit at the corner of the bar, right by the host stand. He ended up marrying the hostess, and they have a beautiful little girl right now. Tony Cole worked his way up in broadcasting from nothing to legend. This is a guy that would go into hotspots all over the globe and against all odds, get you that satellite uplink. He's even been held hostage in Panama. Now he collects great wine and Murano glass. Work has him constantly traveling, and he's dined in the best places in the world. But he always had a home on table 51 at Luke.
Thank you for listening. Communicate, listen more, and evolve. Have a great week, everybody.
Hi, this is comedian Maz Chobrani, and you are listening to The Jeremiah Show on AM 1290 KZSB Santa Barbara. Listen, man.
Hi, this is Cole Robbins with USA Surf Team, and I am here on The Jeremiah Show. Feel free to reach out to me on my Instagram at Robbins_Cole, or you can always find me with Village Properties, and that is ColeRobbins@VillageSite.com.
Do you need help with your restaurant or hospitality business? See how we can help your business at HJLRestaurantAdvisors.com. Check out our website at TheJeremiahShow.com. We are on iTunes and SoundCloud. Please subscribe on iTunes, podcast The Jeremiah Show. Did you like our soundtrack? Find all of our soundtracks on Spotify, The Jeremiah Show. As always, a big thanks to Dr. D for making our voices come alive on the airwaves, and to our station manager, Les Carroll, for letting us on the airwaves at all. Be sure to check out our very own Richard Dr. D. Dugan's Peabody Award-nominated radio show, Tell Me Your Story, every Sunday at 7 a.m. and again at 7 p.m. Thank you for listening to The Jeremiah Show with Dr. D. Listeners, we appreciate you and want to hear from you. Please send us your ideas at ShowJeremiah on Twitter and Instagram. The Jeremiah Show is produced by executive producer Jeremiah Higgins and sound engineer Richard Dr. D. Dugan. Have a great rest of your week, everyone. Evolve.
Red and yellow and on fire, and the clouds would catch the colors of red and yellow.
They were beautiful, the most beautiful sky.